You're listening to a podcast from the University of Cambridge. Volcanic activity in Iceland and the impact of its ash cloud on European air travel has made us all look at those who study the way volcanoes behave with renewed admiration. They talk reverentially about tectonic plates, magma flows, and hotspots. But in reality, volcanologists have never been busier. Their skills are being called on not just to help predict eruptions and natural disasters, but to explain climate change. They're also using cutting-edge analysis to look back on volcanic activity of the past. Andrew Wallace-Hadrell of the University of Cambridge is analysing the volcanic ash of Herculaneum to reveal a new understanding of the ancient Roman city. But we hear first from Clive Oppenheimer, a reader in the geography department at Cambridge.
You can see a load of plastic cases for equipment here, and
Clive looks at measurement, modelling and super eruptions. It's a job that keeps him on high alert, with suitcase packed and ready.
There are probably at least 10 to 20 volcanoes erupting at any one time in different parts of the world, and in any one year there's typically around about 70 volcanic eruptions. And some of those are volcanoes that erupt for years, decades, centuries even, so they're just very long-lived ongoing eruptions, and then there'll be something new will flare up somewhere in the world. I'm always very happy out on a volcano, just the views, the fresh air, the smell of sulfur.
Most of Clive Oppenheimer's work takes place on Mount Erebus in Antarctica. Using ultraviolet spectrometers and infrared devices, he studies the gases given off during activity and analyses its likely effect on the environment.
Quite recently, we were involved in an aircraft campaign to measure the plume itself downwind. And one of the things that showed up was ozone loss in the volcanic cloud. And that's something that we understand now increasingly well as likely to be a result of bromine emissions from the volcano. Bromine is very reactive in the atmosphere and it will chew up ozone. So we've got some very new results, which hopefully will come out quite soon, that link the emissions from the volcano with this downwind ozone depletion.
Mount Erebus is considered a comparatively safe volcano. Its position in the middle of the Antarctic wilderness sees to that. Even the penguins have learned to stay away. The findings from Clive's research at Erebus are also informing our understanding of the world's most dangerous volcano on the Italian coast, Vesuvius.
The magma, the lava composition at Erebus is called phonolite, and it's named after a rock which, when you hit it with a hammer, it rings like a bell. So that's where the name comes from. And it's a relatively common magma in volcanoes around the world, one of which is Vesuvius. It has a track record of explosive fatal eruptions, and it's now over 60 years since the last event. So there's a lot of interest and concern as to what state it's in. Is it going to brew up for another very large event?
But perhaps our clue to Vesuvius's next period of activity might lie in a more detailed examination of the great eruption of AD 79, which destroyed the cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum. Andrew Wallace-Hadrell is Master of Sydney Sussex College, Cambridge, and directs the Herculaneum Conservation Project.
We always knew from the sources that there was a very big earthquake about 17 years before the eruption, 62-63 AD. The new evidence that we've been discovering is by work on the ancient seashore of Herculaneum. And what we've found is evidence of less dramatic, but in some ways more important change, which is the slow shaking of bradycism, where the whole crust of the earth moves up and down quite slowly, but quite a long way. How it reads is that in a place where there had been a quarry, the sea has come in, and then the sea goes back, and they build out on top of that level, and they build some very luxurious baths. There's a fashion at that period for heated baths right at the water's edge. And they also built out a rather magnificent house with a great tower on many levels. And then the sea comes back in again, And you see the response in the desperate filling in of the bottom level of the new tower that they've built, and the desperate attempts to repair the baths. And then the sea goes back out again, and they breathe a sigh of relief and extend the baths and so on, and everything there. And then the big eruption comes. And of course, if you could photograph that through time, once a year for 100 years, and speed it up, you would see a constant movement, and you would know something really big is happening.
But if the clear historical signs are there from geology and history, it seems frustrating that we can't predict future eruptions more accurately. Clive Oppenheimer again.
We are probably not as accurate as weather forecasters, so that probably already puts us in a pretty poor category. But we can do more than seismic forecasts of people trying to predict earthquakes. With a volcano, an eruption requires moving a large amount of molten rock from 10 kilometers or so below the surface up to the top. And to do that, it has to squeeze apart the rock in the crust. It has to change the shape of the volcano. Gases will leak out. There'll be earthquakes associated with cracking of the rock between the magma and the surface. And all of these signs can be picked up by sensitive instruments.
There's no way in the next million years that Vesuvius isn't going to erupt several times. But that doesn't ever enable one to say on the 24th of August 2010 there will be a new eruption, so we better all move up. But I think the really important thing is understanding the implications for civil defence.
Today's owners of fashionable villas in the foothills of Vesuvius will probably have more warning about an impending eruption than the inhabitants of Pompeii and Herculaneum ever did. Clive Oppenheimer, though, believes that it's the wider impact that should really concern us. He believes fatalities might occur many thousands of miles away from the eruption itself.
One of the very interesting volcanoes is Laki. It's a volcano in Iceland, which erupted in 1783. And it was quite a long-lived eruption, went on for the best part of 9 months. And this produced huge amounts of emissions of sulfur gases and fluorine gases. And it's been linked with a very hot summer in Western Europe in 1783. And we even found evidence. This was a PhD student who worked here, Claire Whitten, who looked at burial records from the period in England. She recognized a very large increase in the death rate in the late summer of 1783. Far in excess of what you'd expect. And in fact, there's another peak in the death rate in the winter, 1783-84. So it shows that volcanoes can have a very long reach, thousands of kilometers away, through the emissions of gases and particles.
I think all the time we're learning from disasters just how enormously much we can do. But we mustn't base our reactions on misunderstandings of human nature and how people react. And you have to understand the enormous tenacity of people to place. It's lovely to have a villa up in the pine trees, up the slopes of Vesuvius. It's beautiful up there. It's irresistibly beautiful. At the moment, what's happening is there is an enormous sense of peace, of it's okay, we can survive with it. And you know that these guys will be the first to go.
Andrew Wallace-Hadrell and Clive Oppenheimer of the University of Cambridge. You've been listening to a podcast from the University of Cambridge.